Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
The Volume.
The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You could bet on absolutely anything. If you want to bet on UConn, or North Carolina fans can get in on this year to bet them to win the title, all the way down to teams like Stetson and Longwood to win the title. You can even bet individual seeds to win the title. You can bet anything on DraftKings for the tournament. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code HOOPS. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code HOOPS. That's H-O-O-P-S. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, welcome to Hoops Tonight here at The Volume. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope all of you guys are having an incredible week. We just have a quick show for you today. We're going to be hitting the two ESPN games from last night. The New York Knicks went into Golden State and beat the Warriors. And then after that, the Sixers got a big win. They've been kind of sneaky okay for the last 16, 17 games after Embiid went down. So we're going to break down Heat Sixers. And then I have a short mailbag for the end of the show as well. You guys know the drill before we get started. Subscribe to our brand new YouTube channel. It'll mean a lot to me. If you guys would take a second to scroll down and hit that subscribe button. Don't forget about our podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts, under Hoops Tonight. It's also super helpful if you leave a rating and a review on that front. Follow me on Twitter at @_JasonLT for film threads and show announcements. And then last but not least, keep dropping mailbag questions in the YouTube comments. We're going to have a couple more mailbags later on this week. All right, let's talk some basketball. So the Knicks jumped the Warriors earlier. They went up 18-4. They're flying around on defense. Main story that really stood out at the beginning of this game was the same kind of thing that we've seen a lot from teams guarding the Warriors over the last couple of years, and that's just basically completely ignoring their front court players to chase Steph around and to help on all of his screening actions so that Steph can't find openings, and to dare guys that are capable of making shots but not great at making shots to make shots. And they were basically conceding jumpers to Draymond and Andrew Wiggins and Jonathan Kuminga early in the game, and Wiggins and Kuminga in particular were really missing to start. And Deuce McBride was doing a great job on Steph chasing around. And so Steph didn't have a field goal in the first quarter. A lot of missed jumpers from some of the Warriors forwards. Next thing you know, you're down 18-4. On the other end of the floor, the three main guys were carrying the Knicks offense early. Deuce McBride hit a couple of threes that were open off of coverage situations, and he rode that into confidence to start making the tougher off the dribble jump shots. This is a concept I talk about all the time on the show. Like, we'll see a guy hit a shot and we'll be like, oh my gosh, he never makes that shot. This is so fake or whatever. He's having the night of his life. This is ridiculous. And it really isn't all that complicated to figure out. Like, these guys are pros playing a role. So Deuce McBride is a bench guard typically, and he's a guy that like guards really well at the point of attack and can run some ball screens, can spot up, do this kind of stuff, but he's a low usage guy in terms of what his role is on this team. That does not mean that's all he practices or that all he has in his bag. Almost every player in the NBA has a far more advanced bag of tricks than they show in games. Like, for instance, if I just took like an off-ball player, take a guy like KCP, and I dropped him in your pickup basketball run today, and he cared enough to try, that dude could go into crazy off-the-dribble stuff better than anybody in that gym, even though in the NBA right now, he's primarily a movement shooter and a guy who comes off of dribble handoffs and stuff like that. Like, he's a 3-and-D off-ball kind of role-player guard, right? But he's capable of so much more. And so if you let a guy like that get into a rhythm and he starts to have the confidence and the freedom from the coach, like, okay, you've hit a couple shots, feel free to push the envelope a little bit, they can dip into that deeper bag of their tricks to find some stuff. And Deuce McBride was hitting like step back threes, and he had multiple like a between the legs dribble kind of into a sidestep type of 3-point shot off the dribble. Like, that's the kind of stuff that Deuce can do, but maybe he doesn't show every single game. And so a lot of times we focus on, you know, shot variance in these regards when it's like, okay, he got in a rhythm from being wide open, and then he started to make shots that he does practice. Just, you know, what do you think Deuce McBride talks about behind the scenes? Right now he's a bench guard, but of course he's got ambitions. Of course he'd like to one day be a starting guard in this league. Of course he'd one day like to be a guy who has the usage to take two or three pull-up threes off the dribble in ball screens more frequently, right? Like, so of course, behind the scenes, he's working on that stuff. Isaiah Hartenstein was the second big guy that was carrying things offensively for the Knicks earlier. Two main ways: burning Draymond for help, but in short range shot making and also on the offensive glass. And so again, when we talk about the short roll, the idea behind the short roll is instead of rolling hard all the way to the rim and jumping and making yourself available at the rim, when there's a drop coverage big that is hanging all the way back underneath the basket, sometimes you're making yourself easier to guard there. So you want to stop short and try to find an opening in the middle of the floor. And that looks different depending on the coverage. So a short roll on a blitz, for instance, the both defenders are out and you're short rolling into the open space you can catch and turn and run a 4-on-3. A short roll in a drop coverage is finding the soft spot before the rim protector. So imagine in a blitz, Draymond's up at the level of the screen. Draymond's away from the play. So you get the ball over the top to a Hartenstein. He's mainly going against smaller players and he's making a 4-on-3 type of read. If Draymond's in a drop coverage and he's underneath the basket, Hartenstein's short rolling so that he doesn't go all the way into Draymond, and so that he can catch in that little short range and either hit his little push shot or maybe quick a drop step into a little hook shot over his left shoulder or whatever it is. He's looking for an opening to be available as a scorer. He did some damage there. Then he had 5 offensive rebounds in this game. And that's just textbook, like Draymond gets engaged in help or Draymond is dropping in some sort of ball screen coverage. And Hartenstein has an opening on the weak side, either with nobody on him or with a smaller player on him to do some damage on the offensive glass. And then finally, Jalen Brunson. He's become one of my favorite players to watch in the league, really. Just watching the leap that he's taken in New York. But I thought last year in the playoff run was where he really won me over, just showing that this guy's legitimately a star guard in this league. This is not a, you know, a short, small sample size, oh, he played above his pay grade. No, this dude's just really freaking good at basketball. And specifically in these super physical and stagnant games, he can be really effective. He had 34 points. I thought he outplayed Steph Curry in this game. Steve Kerr talked after the game about how it felt like they got jumped early and they just couldn't regain control of the game. And that's exactly what it felt like watching. They went down 18-4. There'd be these Warriors runs, right? Like, we'd get Chris Paul. He had his pull-up jumper going in this game, so he'd hit a couple jumpers in pick and roll, or like Klay Thompson and Trayce Jackson-Davis had a really nice two-man game going in this game, which, by the way, on a side note, Trayce Jackson-Davis having such role-man chemistry with everybody already just goes to show you how gifted naturally he is at some of the stuff in that role game. And I think he's picking up some of the details, too. Trayce is just going to be such a useful player in this league for such a long time. But, like, Klay and Trayce Jackson-Davis would get going and make a couple plays together, or Steph would make a couple of plays and they get it down to, like, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 points. And then the Knicks would just respond every single time. Deuce McBride would hit another rescue shot at the end of the shot clock, or the Warriors would have turnover, get kicked ahead, and Dante DiVincenzo would hit a transition three, or, you know, Jalen Brunson would get to the foul line or something like that. They were just able to stymie all of those runs, and the Warriors could never make a real push. Really, to me, this game was just another great example of how overwhelming physically New York can be, even when they're down guys. OG Anunoby down with elbow maintenance, and I don't know what's going on there, because I thought he had a procedure done to try to kind of address that situation, but it appears to be kind of flaring up on him again. That's concerning, because like, he already has gone through a process and it still is a problem. So hopefully they can figure that out sooner than later. Still no Julius Randle or Mitchell Robinson. So you're down your entire front court, but they're still, it's every other guy on the roster is still just a really physically imposing player. Like, Josh Hart is a bowling ball of a wing in this league. Isaiah Hartenstein is a monster. Deuce McBride is a pain in the ass perimeter defender. Dante DiVincenzo has been one of the best 3-and-D guards in the league this year. Precious Achiuwa had 5 offensive rebounds in this game. And then Jalen Brunson, I think he's one of the most physically imposing small stars that we have in this league. And so I just really hope we get to see them at full strength when we get to the postseason, because I really think this Knicks team can do some damage in that environment. On the Warriors front, I've had this 6-game stretch circled as a potential problem stretch for the Warriors for a little while now, just because they're, before we actually get into the details, let's just look at the games. The Knicks, obviously, last night, then they play the Grizzlies. Then they play the Pacers, then they play the Timberwolves, then they play the Heat, then they play the Magic. So why does that stretch concern me? Well, let's look at some specific guys. Like, with the Knicks, you're getting Dante DiVincenzo and Deuce McBride and all of the Knicks physicality. I saw a tweet that was going around yesterday from January 27th from a Knicks fan. This was, by the way, January 27th, before the refs stopped calling fouls the way that they did recently. The tweet said, everyone in the NBA is scoring like 150 points a night. Then they come to Madison Square Garden and the Knicks beat them with metal bats for 2 hours. That's literally what it was like. That's what it was like before the changes are made. And now that stuff is being legalized in a lot of ways, and it's getting more like that. So that's what the Knicks bring to the table. Obviously, the Grizzlies are a bad team. The Warriors should win that game. That's an outlier. But the Pacers, Aaron Nesmith and Andrew Nembhard. The Timberwolves, Anthony Edwards, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Jaden McDaniels. The Heat, they've been a top 5 defense since January 1st, since the turn of the new year. It's going to be Terry Rozier and Caleb Martin and Bam Adebayo on the back line and weird zones and aggressive coverages and things like that. And then the Magic have Jalen Suggs, who's arguably the best guard defender in the NBA. So why does that concern me? Because, like we saw last night, the Warriors can really struggle offensively unless Steph goes supernova. And obviously Steph still can go supernova. He's still absolutely capable of that. Even one of those matchups I had circled, the Pacers, they had a game against the Pacers a few weeks ago where Steph just lit them on fire at the start of the game and they blew him out. So I'm not going to sit here and pretend like that can't happen. But here's the thing. No superstar, not even the best player in the world, Nikola Jokic, not even LeBron James at the height of his powers or Michael Jordan at the height of his powers, no superstar can go supernova every single night, especially when they get into their late 30s and Steph's 36 years old now. So, like, what we see happen is, as long as you can, as a team, bring physical layers of perimeter defense and aggressive coverages and make it hard for Steph, meaning, like, kind of like last night, he gets 27, but it's kind of a pain in the ass 27. And you're preventing him from going nuclear more often than not, which, by the way, is not a Steph problem. That's literally just every team is throwing the kitchen sink at them. And as long as they have the personnel to hang, I'm not talking about the Lakers. I'm not talking about Austin Reeves and Jackson Hayes for most of the night. This is a completely different challenge. When you run into real perimeter talent defensively and teams that can bring that kind of physicality, they can at least make Steph work hard and help avoid the supernova performances. From there, when that happens, the Warriors desperately need consistent offensive production off of Steph, and none of those guys are consistent. Klay Thompson at this age, just some nights he doesn't have it. Andrew Wiggins, like I we're going to talk about him in the mailbag, so I won't get into it right now, but like he had a night where his jumper wasn't going, right? Jonathan Kuminga had a little bit of like, he had a reasonably efficient night. I think he had like 16 points, but he had a bunch of those young guy mistakes, like stupid kick ahead passes or dribbling into traffic and turning it over. Those are normal stuff you see from a young guy and an inconsistency that you can expect in that situation. And so that's the thing. It's like when you can kind of make things difficult for Steph, which a lot of teams in the league don't have the personnel to, but we're running into a stretch here where some of these games, they have that type of personnel. It shines a light on the inconsistencies of the role players. I don't think they're going to lose all those games because there will be games in there where they do get a good Andrew Wiggins scoring night. They do get a good Jonathan Kuminga scoring night, or Steph does go supernova. But this is a stretch I have my eye on here, these six games, and I wouldn't be surprised if they went 3-3 over this stretch because of the fact that like some of these specific matchups can shine a light on some of the Warriors' specific weaknesses. That's something I'm going to be keeping an eye on as we head into the next couple of weeks.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will bring his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoops takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. All right, moving on to Heat Sixers. Another super physical game. By the way, I am loving this from the NBA. These games are just so much more entertaining and so have so much better flow. And I feel like they're so much more realistic in terms of what these teams could potentially accomplish in the postseason. Spoelstra went really heavy on zone in this game. He had 38 possessions of zone overall, including 12 in the fourth quarter, something he really leaned on. Philly only managed to score on 14 of those 38 possessions of zone, but we were tied at 85 with about 7 minutes left. Buddy Hield broke the tie on a zone possession where they just threw a swing pass to Buddy Hield on the left wing, and there was a contest, and it was pretty far out. It was like 26 feet, but he knocked it down, so that put him up 88-85. Then at 88-87, there was this kind of interesting sequence. This is a rock fight game, so every single basket means so much, right? So it's 88-85 or 88-87, and the Sixers have the ball. Maxey's dribbling on the left wing. They're in the Heat are in man-to-man on this possession. You can see Spoelstra is on the sideline. He's signaling he wants them to bring on a double team, right? So Jaime Jaquez is guarding Tyrese Maxey on the left wing with the live dribble, right? So Spoelstra calls for a double team and a windshield wiper rotation. What that means is as the double team is going, the next guy in line rotates and you leave the opening on the weak side of the floor. So Jaquez is guarding Maxey. Patty Mills is guarding Kyle Lowry on the right wing extended, right? Patty Mills comes over and double teams. They run a really good windshield wiper rotation. Caleb Martin slides up from the wing. That forces Kyle Lowry to take steps away from the basket to make a passing angle. And Tyrese Maxey makes the pass. Kyle Lowry catches like 35 feet from the rim, throws it right back to Maxey. Okay, so now the windshield wiper is set again. Jaime Jaquez is on the ball. Now it's Caleb Martin that is on the wing. Everyone's kind of rotated around one. So now Patty Mills is down on that left side. And then Bam Adebayo has now been matched up on the right corner instead of underneath the basket. So basically what happens is Spoelstra calls for the exact same double team. Caleb Martin comes over and doubles with Jaime Jaquez, except for this time, Bam does not slide up. And I think it had to do with a hesitance to leave because he was still in position to kind of help. Because even though he's in the right corner, the ball's on the left wing, so he's kind of in position to help around the rim anyway. Bam is hesitant to go out. Kyle Lowry identifies it, just steps in and makes himself available. And Tyrese Maxey just throws a basic swing pass to a wide open Kyle Lowry on the right wing, who knocks down the three to puts him up 91-87. So, like, kind of an unusual execution mistake from Miami. Spoelstra is basically calling for a basic double in rotation. They execute it well once. The Sixers just reset, run it again. The Heat do the exact same action, but they fail to make that windshield wiper rotation to the top, and they give up the wide open three. So 91-87, we get a man possession. I'm focusing on Philly on offense here. We'll get to Miami on defense here in a minute. So at 91-87, we get a man-to-man possession, and Tyrese Maxey has the ball on the right wing this time, and we have Jaime Jaquez really digging down into the right-hand driving lane with Kelly Oubre in the corner, and then we have Caleb Martin digging way down into the left-hand driving lane. So Tyrese Maxey is facing an ISO, but basically like where my lights are right here are defenders, so there's no real driving lane. Now, one of the things I talk about when I talk about digging down is there's a baked-in closeout opportunity, right? All I need to do is throw the ball to Kelly Oubre, and he's got a closeout opportunity. And that might be a catch and automatically rip through to the right. That might be a catch and shoot three if it's too light of a closeout. Or in this case, Jaime Jaquez is through a super aggressive closeout towards the baseline side, expecting Kelly Oubre to kind of rip through to the right towards the baseline. Oubre throws a pump fake. Jaquez flies by him. Oubre rips through to the middle, and he's got a full head of steam. And he's one of the rare athletes in the league that can go against a vertical Bam underneath the basket and get the lift and separation he needs to finish. He just jumps and goes right through Bam Adebayo at the rim and finishes. Now the Sixers are up 93-87. Then we have an offensive rebound sequence where Kyle Lowry hits basically the dagger. Okay, so it's 93-89 at this point. And there's a zone possession where we end up getting a three-point shot out of the right corner, I believe, for Tyrese Maxey. Okay. Now, this is have you guys ever heard the expression that it's hard to rebound in zones? One of the specific reasons why is that the matchups get funky. So in this zone, it's a 2-3 concept of a zone, right? So Bam Adebayo is underneath the basket. But when the ball gets swung to the right corner, Bam Adebayo slides over. The entire zone kind of like shifts towards that right side of the floor, right? So now Jaime Jaquez, who's in the left corner in the zone, is now down on the left block. And Bam Adebayo is typically underneath the rim, is now on the right block. And then obviously the right corner man is extended out to the shooter. So as a result, when the shot goes up, Paul Reed is on the left block engaged with Jaime Jaquez. If it's man-to-man, Bam is engaged with Paul Reed. He can box him out, much better a chance for him to win that battle, right? On this possession, Jaime Jaquez is boxing out Paul Reed. And Caleb Martin comes over the top to try to crack down. But he's just at a complete physical disadvantage. Paul Reed goes up and grabs the basketball, kicks it back out, and then that's when we have Kyle Lowry, which is just an old school move, drives left, spins off of Terry Rozier, pump fakes, Bam jumps out of his shoes, and he sneaks underneath and makes that little right-handed scoop shot off the glass, 95-89. That basically was the dagger. But I thought it was a good example of just some of the downsides of zone. Because again, Bam is going, if the ball gets to the high post, he's showing high, right? The ball goes to the right side, he's showing right. Got ball goes to the left side, he's showing left. He's in all these different spots. Paul Reed is just going to find himself an opening there. He sees Bam because the ball goes to the right. He sees Bam go to the right. He knows he's got position on that left block. He just battles for position. He gets an easy rebound. That's a baked-in advantage against a zone defense, is people just aren't matched up. And so you have a better opportunity to find mismatches in rebounding situations. On the other end of the floor, it really was this simple. Philly was running drop coverage with Mo Bamba and Paul Reed. The main on-ball guys down the stretch were Nick Batum, Kelly Oubre, and Kyle Lowry had a possession on Terry Rozier as well. But the Heat were primarily running. There were a couple random ones in there. There was like two random Jaime Jaquez post ups, and he missed a really tough left shoulder fade over Kyle Lowry, and then he had a post up of Kelly Oubre where he may or may not have gotten fouled, but it didn't get called. And there was like a couple of missed jump shots in there as well. Patty Mills missed one in the right corner, and Caleb Martin missed one in the left wing that were pretty decent looks. But most of the offense for the Heat down the stretch was typical two man game between Thomas Bryant and Terry Rozier and Bam Adebayo and Terry Rozier. And they just did a really good job. Both Mo Bamba and Paul Reed had really good contests in that sequence on Rozier at the rim and in the mid-range. Rozier missed three of his last four shots, three of which were in pick and roll. And then again, this is one of the downsides with Tyler Herro and Jimmy Butler both being out. Those are guys that are your best guys on the team at busting drop coverage. And so because of the being down your two best drop coverage busters, you're in a situation against Philly where their coverage is going to have some success against you. The Heat scored just 6 points in the final 7 minutes as the Sixers got the win. Tyrese Maxey, 30 points, 8 rebounds and 10 assists. Unbelievable. Kelly Oubre poured in 22 points. This is the sixth time in the last 9 games he's had 20 plus. Obviously, he's spacing with the shot. He shoots 40% on unguarded catch and shoot threes. But I thought this game was a great example of the spacing that he brings both as a slasher and as a cutter. He's really good at identifying when the low man steps over. Again, that's his man who's stepping over to help tag a roller, right? That means ball screen guy, the screener is rolling downhill. Kelly Oubre's man steps up to guard. Instead of just waiting in the corner for a three-point shot, he'll cut along the baseline and get dunks that way. And when you're that type of athlete, that's just a more efficient spot-up situation than shooting a three. Not just for a shooter, not just for Kelly Oubre, but for anybody. Steph Curry's not going to convert corner threes as well as Kelly Oubre is going to convert open dunks along the baseline. Like that. Again, it's a read, because if it's not there, if it's more traffic, you want to be spaced out. But if you see the opportunity there and you make the read, that is a 100% play for an athlete like Kelly Oubre. And then in addition to that, the slashing, like, again, this is why I look at spot-up efficiency so much. And Kelly Oubre hasn't had that great of a spot-up season overall, and that's because he hasn't shot very well on contested jumpers, although he made some contested jumpers in this game. But a big part of it is, like, if you can catch and rip like Kelly Oubre did on that final sequence, one of those final sequences out of the right corner, that's another way to provide spacing without having to knock down jump shots. And he had some good defensive possessions on Terry Rozier as well. I thought Kelly Oubre played a great game. And then Kyle Lowry with the old man ball. Just, again, this is a rock fight of a game. Everyone's struggling to score, but he made two of the biggest shots in the game. First, recognizing that botched double windshield wiper rotation I was talking about, where he stepped into the right wing and made that three. That was a great read. And then just that old school spin move on Terry Rozier. Terry Rozier, better athlete, beat him to the spot, but just had the counter move loaded up, went to that spin move, pump fake to take advantage of the eager athleticism of the Miami Heat front line, and ends up sneaking in a layup. The Sixers, they lost six of their first seven when Joel Embiid went down, but they've really managed to steady things from there. They're 8-9 since February 10th. That's hanging around 500, and hanging around 500 without Embiid is a massive win. Like, they had they gone 6-11 instead, so two of those games end up being losses instead, right? At 6-11, they're sitting at the eighth seed and they're facing a road play-in game. So, like, if they can somehow linger around this 500-ish area, and if they can get out of the play-in and stay at number six, that gives you a much better chance with a full first round series against a three seed, which won't be Boston, for Embiid to kind of get his legs back underneath him and potentially make a playoff run. Last note, in this 8-9 span, Tyrese Maxey, so in these last 17 games, 28 points, 5 rebounds, and 6 assists on 45% from the field, 39% from three, and 91% from the line. I've been really impressed by Tyrese this year. I think he's done an admirable job with a limited supporting cast. All right, guys, let's get to our mailbag. Hey, Jason, big fan of the show from Belgium. You mentioned how Dame has been playing better in games where he has the ball in his hands and can get in a rhythm, often when Giannis is not on the floor. If Dame needs the ball, but with Giannis on the floor, their offense is primarily run through him, can the two of them reach their individual offensive ceilings playing together? And if so, what would that look like? Also in a playoff setting. So I really want the Bucks to get more into spamming the two-man game. So again, like, how do you maintain rhythm for both guys but keep the ball in Dame's hands by spamming two-man game? And this is where it can get a little convoluted in terms of roles. So for instance, like, if you're the Denver Nuggets, you've got guys that can score in KCP, Aaron Gordon, and Michael Porter Jr., but they have a really good hierarchy in that system to where the vast majority of touches for all three of those guys are going to take place off the ball. And so because of that, they don't take up usage. And since they don't take up usage, it allows Murray and Jokic to spam their action and keep the two of them in rhythm the majority of the time that they're on the floor. Whereas with the Bucks, it's like Dame will just run Dame Lopez ball screens a bunch as well. And then it's like, well, we got to keep Chris Middleton involved, right? Or it's like Giannis wants to play his one-on-one stuff that he does. And it, whereas like I'm a big believer, like, let Giannis push in transition, but if you get into the half court, go run a ball screen and try to get Dame with the ball in his hands as well. And like some of that's on Dame too, because when Dame's spamming two-man game, I think he can get a little bit ball hoggy sometimes. I thought that was a big problem down the stretch of the Lakers game in particular. But just it's one of those things where I would have Lopez and Middleton play with green lights, but within the context of the Dame Giannis two-man game. In addition to spamming it to keep the two of them in rhythm, it just gives you a lot more reps with those guys before you get to the postseason and gives you a better chance of reaching their ceiling there. Hey, Jason, love the show. I'm not sure if you've ever done a video on this, but who is your top 10 players of all time? I would love to hear your take on that never-ending debate. So I did a video this summer on the top 25 players of the last 25 years. And that video series is on our YouTube feed if you go back to, like, I want to say August. But so I did a bunch of stuff on that, so you can find that there. Off the top of my head, though, I sort them into perimeter players and bigs up until now, because now the bigs actually play more of an offensive fulcrum type of role. But like I view like centers pre-2000 as like fundamentally a different sport than what the centers do today and what all perimeter players have done ever. So I keep them in separate lists. As far as perimeter players, for me, it's MJ by a hair over LeBron. And I think LeBron has a legitimate case. Like he's going to make he's going to probably be, I think he's been a top 10 player this year, fringe, like in that 8, 9, 10 range. So like we're looking at 20 consecutive seasons of him being a top 10 player in the league. And like at a certain point, like if you put that in a vacuum and you get a slot machine GM and a slot machine owner and a slot machine coach and a slot machine supporting cast, meaning like completely random, and you had to pick a player to anchor that for their career, you might pick LeBron. Just because 20 seasons of a top 10 player is just going to give you so many opportunities to win. That said, I think Michael Jordan's dominance in the 90s is at another level above anything LeBron did in his era. And I do think a big part of why he didn't play as much was because he kicked everyone's ass so bad that he wasn't feeling challenged. He retired after winning 3 titles in a row, right? And then he retired again after winning 3 titles in a row. So like... if MJ wasn't as dominant, he probably stays around longer and plays more years, right? So like it gets complicated there when we go into a vacuum, because MJ's career didn't happen in a vacuum either, right? And so I lean slightly towards MJ over LeBron. I have Kobe at 3, Magic at 4, Steph at 5, and Bird at 6 for my top 6 players, perimeter players of all time. So that gives you a little teaser, but it's in my... you could find that in our feed from earlier this summer. Following up on your Kyrie rant, do you agree with the narrative that the 2017-2018 Celtics were better without Kyrie? Where on earth did that idea come from? This is something we've all seen, but there's this tendency, and Twitter gets like this a lot, where it's like anytime we've decided somebody's done something wrong, we are just going to assassinate everything about their character forever. It's very much like a bullying type of culture that we see online. It's literally one of the worst things about that platform. And one of the things that happened with Kyrie is he did some questionable stuff off the court, right? And like once that kind of thing happened, everyone jumped on the Kyrie's a piece of shit, you know, bandwagon, which by the way is fundamentally false. Like by all indications, Kyrie's an excellent human being. So like there's no reason for people to have felt that way. But like, look, do I agree with everything Kyrie did off the floor over the course of the last few years? Obviously not. But there's a way to have a fair conversation about that, which is like, here are the things Kyrie's great at and all the positives he brings to the table. Here are the risks that are involved in a business partnership or a team partnership with Kyrie Irving. let's make a, you know, educated decision about this. But instead, that's not how Twitter acts. Instead, Twitter's like, fuck all of this. Like, none of that matters. This guy sucks, you know, and we just focus on that. And like, honestly, I thought Kyrie caught a lot of strays over those years. And like he brought it on himself in a lot of ways, but as is always the case, it ends up going off the rails into so much hyperbole and slander. And honestly, I think Kyrie's become one of the most underrated players in the league as a result of that media backlash from some of his behavior. Last question. Jason, can you address how Andrew Wiggins is absolutely, completely, and utterly garbage? It's so frustrating as a fan to see a guy get paid that much money and barely even try. He doesn't even look like he cares anymore. Kerr needs to take him out of the rotation for Moody to get more playing time. So here's the thing. I watched last night's game, and I thought Andrew Wiggins came out playing hard. And I thought he cut off several drives from Jalen Brunson in the opening minutes. He was engaged physically. For the most part, over the last month, I really think Andrew Wiggins' a defensive focus and energy has been really good. Really, Andrew Wiggins' downslide comes down to two basic things. This year, he's getting 0.95 points per jump shot. In the 2022 year they won the title, he got 1.04 points per jump shot. So he's 10% worse as a jump shooter. Then, this year, he's shooting 57% at the rim. In the 2022 season they won the title, he was 64% at the rim. So he's substantially worse. He's gone from being a good rim finisher to a bad rim finisher for his position and athletic profile in those 2 years. And so what's happened is the ugly offensive moments for Wiggins have been really bad. Like last night, his jumper was off and you're like, oh man. And like now it is one of those things where it makes more sense sometimes, depending on the matchup, to go to Moody. But at the end of the day, like I do think Wiggins is trying. I just think maybe, I'm not sure what's caused the slide. That could be something off the court. Maybe he's not doing as diligent about his skill development as he needs to be. But when I watch Andrew Wiggins, I don't feel like he's not trying. That said, when he misses some shots, when he smokes a layup around the rim or he misses a couple jumpers in a row, you can see that affect his body language a little bit, but that happens to everybody. That's completely normal. But again, just kind of put a bow on the Wiggins thing. I don't think he's completely and utterly garbage. I think he's a player that is dealing with some decline. And I think that specifically the pressure from the young players coming up behind him that may or may not deserve some of his rotation minutes are exacerbating that by adding more pressure. And he's just not as good of a jump shooter as a rim finisher as he used to be. And that has diminished his impact particularly by making him a lesser offensive player. All right, guys, that is all I have for today. As always, I sincerely appreciate you guys for supporting the show. We have a double show tomorrow. We have an instant reaction. We'll hit one or two games in the morning. And then tomorrow evening, we are going, I think it's Bucks Celtics. So we got a live show on YouTube after the final buzzer of Bucks Celtics. I will see you guys then.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah.
and some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.